recording again. Well, let's try, we're feeling good, right?
I feel pretty great. Yeah.
I feel pretty okay. Is it time to start the podcast?
It is time to start the podcast. I'm ready.
Hey, it's Loser Lee's Wrestling, and this is the Woos and Whats of AEW Dynamite. My name is Red Jefferson. I'm here with Mowat Jaswal. I'm sorry. I'm here with
Mowat Jaswal.
That's how you do it.
Yeah, that was weird that I did that. Mowat, how are you, bud?
Good. I'm doing great tonight. It's a fine day. What? I don't know. How are you doing?
I had this real rough morning where I was just reaching out to wrestling schools.
You didn't finish the story. We got distracted. What does that mean?
I reached out because I was just looking up wrestling schools and I want to get in, but also I realized that I'm older and more fragile than I used to be, but I'm in pretty okay shape. I think I'm in okay shape, but I reached out to be a manager. I just want to get my foot in. And then they could just beat me up. Then that's all I want, to be able to talk and be creative and get beaten up. And those are the things. So I reached out to Rikishi's wrestling school. I hope to hear back soon.
Red, you're not too old. I got three letters for you. DDP. Bang! Okay? That's what you could be. You could be the next DDP if you try.
You're true. I could be the next DDP.
Work at a strip club for the next couple years and then get, you know...
Build relationships with wrestlers for decades before so that then once I start wrestling, I'm immediately at the top. That's a good idea. I like that. That's smart. That's what he did. I should follow in his footsteps.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be friends with all the AEW guys. Start trading. Befriend them first. That's smart. But this is AEW Dynamite we were covering, Mowat. It's the week after Winter came. Winter came all over the place, and now we're dealing with the repercussions. And now it's AEW Dynamite, the Woos and Whats. That's the good and the bad. By the way, you can follow us on Instagram for all the new, fresh content that's up there all the time. But make sure that you go to our podcast and review it. For Christ's sakes, Mowat. We're doing pretty well on this podcast.
Oh, I've heard the good news. They are hearing us right now.
Ooh. Please review. Yes. And share with your damn friends, you Canadians. They're all Canadians. Really? All of them are Canadians.
Oh, really?
We have so many. The majority. Well, the vast majority.
Well, that's how it spreads. That's how it spreads. One Canadian tells another Canadian, and then a gaggle of Canadians, they spread out there.
Is that Canadian Facebook?
That is. Yeah, that's essentially, yeah. It's just talking to each other in the cold. Yeah.
Tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Well, we're covering AEW, and what a show it was. What a show it was. Mowat, this is the Woos and Whats. We're going to go with our woos, our big best things of the night. Mowat, what's your big woo of the evening?
Here's a fun thing that I forgot to do. I forgot to list what I like out of the show, and I'm looking at my list of woos, and I'm not actually that excited about any of them. But I can just pick one. I'm just thinking about picking one.
Sure.
Randomly.
Sure. I think you should pick one randomly because we don't have to do them like in descending order or ascending order. I like the randomness of it.
All right, let's do it. The Sting promo.
Okay, well,
I was okay with
ready.
That Sting promo. How are you?
I was okay with it as well.
Yeah, this whole episode. Like this whole episode was just kind of like that. It was like, I mean, last week was like an 8 or a 9 for Dynamite. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, it was up there. It's definitely so up there. You can't, one of the best.
Yeah, I think I went into this thing, you know, you can't expect it to keep going into 9 and 10 territory. That's not how, you know, anything works in life. So, like, this is, I think this episode is probably a 5 or a 6. It wasn't bad. I just think it was just kind of happening, you know? So, yeah, the Sting promo, it was not what I expected, you know, because they were pushing him talk like he was going to, you know, Sting speaks finally. You know, I thought we were going to start some narrative storylines and we didn't get that. He came out. He did a very Cody was already in the ring for some reason. But yeah. Tony Schiavone was there, which we all knew.
So was Arn there. For some reason.
Oh, and Arn was there, too. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I agree with you. I thought it was completely fine. Yeah. It was completely fine, non-offensive, because I am generally worried. Last week they said Sting's going to speak. I was generally worried because he's not a good talker. He's got energy, and that's the best part of his talking is that he's energetic. And I was worried that he's like, oh, we're going to hear old Sting come out and not say like interesting things. But he came out, he had some energy, and he kept it short and sweet.
You know what's funny is that I actually thought he was pretty great in this. I thought he was really very well talented at working the audience. Yeah. In a good way. I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, like, he knew how to get people to cheer and how to get people, you know, to interact just through his speaking abilities, which, you know, he's been doing it pretty much his entire life. So it makes sense. But didn't he was wearing crow sting makeup, right? So wasn't the crow sting silent, or did he ever speak? Because that kind of threw me off.
Crow sting talked, and it always upset me because I hate. I hate Sting's voice with the crow makeup. I remember before I knew anything about WCW or Sting, I saw Sting and I'm like, oh my God, he looks fucking cool as shit. Then I heard him talk. I'm just like, why is he talking? Even as a kid, I was like, why is he talking? Yeah. He's like, he sounds completely different than he looks. But like I've gotten used to it. He did talk. In that makeup. Okay. It was just never fun.
It's just been a while that I completely forgot what it was. I'm so used to just seeing him just like stare, like he's a real good starer, like when he's doing it. Like last week it was all staring and he looked great. Mm-hmm. So I was expecting more moody, you know, but so we got this weird like surfer sting and crow sting hybrid, which kind of threw me off, but that was fun. You know, and he sees Tony is like, give me a hug, old friend. And like, I thought that was really cute. It was really cute.
It was very cute. The only thing I disliked about it was Arn Anderson didn't need to be there. I feel like Arn Anderson, I don't like the fact that the first person to speak was Arn Anderson saying, I don't want to be here.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Yeah,
you know, like, I felt like that could have been formatted better or something. But like him calling out Darby Allin.
Yeah.
Because let's just preface for those who may not have watched. Sting came back last week, as you may have already known. He walks out to the ring where Tony Schiavone, Cody, and Arn Anderson are already waiting there. He comes in, Arn Anderson leaves, and then Tony's just like, he says to Tony, he asks him to say his name, and the crowd pops big for it. He leaves. And then he calls out Darby Allin, which I thought was really fun. He's just like, some things are really... reminiscent. What do you say?
Oh, I thought you said familiar. Like, or
real
something.
Familiar. Yeah. That's the thing. And because that's what he just basically ripped off Sting's gimmick, face paint up in the rafters, staring down menacingly.
There's a meme of the image of them staring at each other from last week. That's like, you know, of how like Darby just looks like his son, you know?
Dad? And so
it's stuff like that. Yeah. Like when your dad tells you to turn off the video games or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then he patronized Cody real good. Mm-hmm. He patronized Cody at the end. He's just like, all right, kid. And he kind of like brushed him off. And it was short and sweet. I am positive we're going to see Sting in the ring.
I think so. The way he was described. I mean, that's essentially what he was like, you know, hinting at. Not, so I thought that was fun. Right? Yeah. It was good stuff. I think I don't know what that's going to look like. I am not excited about it, but I like that Sting's back. I like hearing, you know, it's just a nice familiar voice, like he was saying.
Yeah. I do not care to see a Darby Allin Sting match, but I would love to see just Sting and Cody. That's all I really need in order to feel satiated. And then have him tag team with Darby Allin or Sting and Cody or something. Have him be in tag teams where he comes in, Stinger splashes people, gets in the death lock. You know, like just simple things. And he could still go. Look, he looked great.
Yeah. He looked great tonight. Yeah. And this one, he looked real good. Yeah. Yeah. And this was a real good segment for like knowing the history between everybody with Tony, Arn, Cody, and Sting. Like they didn't say a lot of it with Cody in particular, but it was like kind of moving to think about how, you know, just everything that, you know, his father had done, Cody's father with Sting and everything. And just like the fact that it's just crazy to think. That Sting is on, you know, Dusty's son's TV show now on TNT all these years later.
One thing I'm excited for and also going to be disappointed in, I can't wait for whatever Sting's first match is going to be, which I'm assuming Cody, or maybe even down the line, but the video package for Sting versus Cody is going to be amazing. The video, because of the history. The only issue is that WWE has all the footage.
Yeah. You know? So it's probably not going to be that.
It's going to be a lot of pictures. It's going to be a lot of Cody's family pictures. It's going to be a lot of Sting's family pictures. They're going to have to tell us. It's kind of like, they're going to have to do a lot of weaseling around to get away from WWE's copyright. But yeah, very fun. Yeah. Great first woo, Moet.
Thank you.
You just picked that out of your hat.
I really did. Well, yeah.
What's your next one, bud?
This one, I don't... I was like, maybe that one. That one's not so good. What do you, okay. Lots of good promos. Lots of good promos this, this episode, at least in the first hour.
Sure.
I wrote down specifically the Hangman Page and Dark Order promo, which I thought was particularly fun. You didn't like that?
Interesting.
You put
I'm not gonna say I didn't like it. Just for people who Alex Marvez went in the back, saw Hangman Page, asked him who his tag team partners are gonna be for the trios battle, and then John Silver and Alex Reynolds pop out from behind wearing cowboy hats and offer their services, and Hangman Page accepts. They get very excited, and they're going to be a tag team next week. I had that in my woos.
You described that with 0% sass, 0% silliness. They upped that.
No.
They wore
serious.
Such silly cowboy hats, little plastic cowboy hats, sure. And John Silver was dancing around every time Hangman said something. I don't know. Like, there was a lot more joy in that segment.
Sure. You should be happy that I am treating it with as much respect as I am from my hate of John Silver that I had for several weeks. I'm growing there. I'm getting there. I'm liking him more and more. I'm not at the moment where I'm going to be joyous in him freaking saying that he's been living underneath the bar for 7 days.
Come on. It's sassy. It's cute. It's not sassy. I don't know why he keeps it. But it's fun. It's fun. And I'm the only reason.
Tabasco sass almost.
Oh, there you go. Hey, nice call.
I follow Tabasco sass on Instagram and buy their pins.
Please do. Buy their pins. I really just put this there to get you to fall in love with John Silver. It's going to happen. It's going to be glorious.
It's definitely getting there. I missed being the Elite and AEW Dark this week because I watched Impact.
Yeah.
Did you watch it?
It was on. I got bored of it pretty quickly, but I did see the Kenny Omega thing.
I really wished I watched Dark instead.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that... Okay. Well, that's another podcast, I guess. Yeah,
that's another podcast. Another podcast. Well, since I didn't have that Hangman Silver Reynolds, I'll say my big woo, my next woo is, I guess it's actually in the same vein as yours where you said the interviews, Kenny Omega and Don Callis. I thought Kenny Omega and Don Callis had a short-ish interview where we got across Kenny Omega is getting more comfortable. He's feeling more animated. He's looking more animated. He seems to be more like his old self. Don Callis is perfect for this role where it takes the awkwardness away from Kenny Omega trying to re-find himself and lets him have some breathing room. Not all the pressure's on him. He's got someone helping him. And you could tell he's much more comfortable in the ring when Don is there. Like, it's almost night and day. For me, at least, seeing that. And I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. I didn't like the ending as much, but I thought it was cute, and it made it onto my woos. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Don Callis is incredible in this. I love the rose-tinted glasses that he wears now.
Oh, sure.
And actually, that they are both wearing glasses. It just came off, like, especially scummy to me. I'm not sure if you felt that.
Wearing rose-colored glasses. That's interesting.
Wait,
maybe
what?
Because rose-colored glasses is a euphemism for, like, seeing the world in a very, like, favorable way to you.
Oh.
So if he's coming out with rose-colored glasses all the time, everything's peaches and cream to this guy. I think I like that on a deep level that they were not thinking of.
That's pretty good. I did not know that. I mean, they could use that. I think we'll give it to them.
I think they should.
Yeah, I'll just keep going, though. I mean, I like the heel turn. I like where it's going overall. I think it's very intriguing. It's not what I thought it was going to be. It made me feel kind of stupid for overreacting last week. I was so bloody hyped over friggin' whatever. The we'll see you on Tuesday at Impact. Like, oh, what could this mean for the industry? The whole industry. Yeah. Like, it means nothing, sure, for God's sakes. So it's going to be a friggin'...
Very small.
There'll be a pay-per-view, perhaps. Maybe like a... Like what New Japan and ROH does every now and then, like a War of the Worlds, they you know, maybe, I don't know, Impact and AEW, AAA and AEW. It's not going to be this big deal. I thought it was game changing, but I don't think it is anymore.
I see it being similar to the NWA partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens
less,
occasionally,
but less so maybe.
Yeah, it's
maybe
like
less so.
Yeah, it's like the territory days, which is fun, but it's not as, like, I thought, I don't know what the hell I was thinking. Maybe, like, just week by week invasion, like, 90s invasion sort of, you know, storylines, but that's just not.
I think, like we talked about last week, that would need a mastermind craftsman to be able to work with all these egos that are running individual companies to make a cohesive story where everyone's happy.
Yeah, but Territory Era style totally actually makes sense now that I think about it. Like, there, that makes sense where, like, you're like, you like negotiate with those territories, right? And you don't, if a champ travels over to another territory, he's not going to lose. That's not going to happen. Like, you have to negotiate, like, to make sure everyone's, like, top talent stays in the top. You know, they don't look foolish when they move over. And, you know, and I think if they can manage that, it's this give and take. That'd be great.
I'm just excited for the potential matches. Like, every now and then we get a crossover superstar, which is really fun. I can't wait. You know the panda?
Yeah, that panda and Dark.
There's the two pandas.
Yeah,
you know the two pandas.
Dumb pandas.
You know the chubby, chubby panda.
I'm on Team Taz. Taz berries.
You know the chubby panda.
Yeah, that chubby panda. Yeah.
The chubby panda. I want Falabah to come in and destroy him and take that panda suit back because he's the panda.
The panda. Wait, what are you talking about? He's the panda.
Is all of his social media. He's a panda. He loves pandas. What? He has pandas on his trunks. He has a picture of himself as a cartoon panda in his trunks. Like, he's big into pandas. I want Falabah to take it back because that belongs to him.
Oh, that is pretty good. I don't know much about Falabah, but I know you know a lot about Falabah.
You will.
Yeah, I guess I will.
With this new merger.
Kenny fights, Falabah. One thing I didn't like before we move on, I didn't like how Don Callis is trying to get this phrase over that this is the biggest screw job since Montreal. I find it very annoying and actually kind of offensive as a wrestling nerd. I think it's annoying because I grew up, I was a small child living in Canada when the Montreal screw job happened, and it split my little brain open. It freaked me out. And so I don't know. It hits a little nerve with me. He tried to get it over on the Impact promo and he did it again.
Sure.
It's not the biggest screw job. Fuck you, Don Callis. Fuck you.
I'm entirely shocked that you would take such offense with this after growing up with WWE and see how many times they reference the Montreal screw job every year. Every year there's like, this is the biggest thing since Montreal screw job. And now 30 years later.
Maybe I just cracked.
Like,
maybe
Don Callis says it and you're like, how? Dare you?
I know. Yeah, maybe it just built up tension of like, this isn't as big of a deal. No, don't say anything, Moen. Don't say anything. Let them have their moment. I get it. It's supposed to be a big moment for them. But it's not. It's not the same. Yeah.
It's not the same. Well, I'm glad that we got that out of there and you blew off some steam. We needed to talk about that. Moen, what's your next big woo we got?
I put Young Bucks versus TH2.
I have that as well.
Hey, look at that. I didn't think you'd have that one. That's why
that was actually a great match.
I thought it was good. It was confusing. I'm going to say because it's that style where like just crazy shit happens at all times. So it felt very chaotic. But and the fact that like I just didn't really understand, you know, like who was in trouble, if anyone was ever in trouble. It just things just kept happening at such a quick pace. But I liked it. I like that.
I thought this was more organized chaos than what I'm used to on this show. Mm-hmm. I felt like TH2 actually grounded it a bit more, made things make sense. Because one thing that Jack Evans specifically, but both Jack Evans and Angelico do, is they make things matter. Jack Evans sells for everything.
Oh my God.
And he doesn't forget. He never forgets. If he's limping, he's limping the rest of the match and on his way home. He'll be limping to the gym the next day just because he doesn't want to. He's just so good. They keep things with them. So I feel like this, like I love the part where the Jack Evans goes crazy and gets a 450 off the apron, then gets back in the ring and waits for him to come back while Angelico locks in his finisher. Like all that was really cool. My only issue is, man, I would love for the Young Bucks to just have so many finishers. They have so many finishing double team maneuvers. All of them finisher worthy. All of them finisher worthy. So whenever they hit one, it's almost like I don't ever expect anyone to win. I don't ever expect anyone to ever win. I never expect a Young Buck match to ever end. I expect them to go on forever because there's no way I could feasibly think, oh, this finisher you just did right now was worse than the other one because they're all extraordinarily devastating. I would love for the Young Bucks to have a double super kick and that be their finisher. I'd be so pleased for them, Mr. Super Kick Party, the Super Kick Party kids, freaking just super kick them and have that be a that just doesn't make.
I like that. I like that the super kick to them is actually incredibly weak because they do the super kick party, so they got to super kick everyone like 1,000 times. So I like the idea that they just like doing super kicks because they love DX or whatever, and so that makes sense to me. It's not a finisher, but what you're saying, how they have so many finishing maneuvers, is why I felt like overwhelmed by the match. It was because like towards the last half of the match, it felt like everything that either team did was, you know, was the end
super
of the match,
devastating,
which,
the
which is fun. It's just a different, like, you know, like formula than we're used to. Like they just kind of disrupt the whole thing where it's more about, I guess the choreography of it and the chaos and just building your emotion up to such a high level that, mm-hmm. you know, you explode, I guess. But
that works when you see them once a month when you're at your local shows,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
When you don't get to see them as often. When you see them every week and you see that trick, it's kind of like there's a magician doing the same fucking trick each week.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to ooh and ah each time, even though you've just seen it, and now you're starting to see how they're doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I feel like they have to be careful with that, even though they notoriously don't give a shit about it. The idea of killing the business, I understand that it used against them, and they weren't necessarily killing the business. They were just offering an alternative. But, like, if you're a famous film... I'm trying to think of a famous filmmaker that uses a lot of close-ups, and then you have a movie full of close-ups, it wouldn't be very... fun anymore. It's a tool, it's a trick that you get to do to suck people in. If the movie is all here all the time, you see nothing else.
Oh, red, that's beautiful, because I was thinking about bringing this up, but I didn't know if it was like too, you know, out of the subject, but Brian De Palma, the director, he mm-hmm. describes the close-up as banging on a drum, and you can bang mm-hmm. on a drum, and it's a very shocking moment when you bang on a drum in a but if you're banging on a drum constantly, like boom 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 boom, after a while, that doesn't mean anything anymore. After a while, it's just you're just banging on a drum, being annoying as hell. So you got to pick your moments when to use that, when to use the drum, when to bang on it, and when to shock people. You got to pick the moments. And when you do, it's brilliant.
Mo, since when are we completely on the same page?
Yeah.
Like 110%.
That was actually extremely weird, yeah, that you did that.
This is gross. This is really weird. Right, let's move on.
Okay. Yeah, oh, Jesus Christ. It. Yeah, moving
on. Yeah. What do we got next, Mo? What do we got next? We killed it with that one.
Oh, jeez.
And essentially, we're 3-for-3 because we both picked interview segments. You picked Hangman Silver. I picked Omega Callus. What next you got going, Mo?
Yeah, most of mine were promos, just quick promos. MJF promo was good. Uno promo was good, real quick. But the one I will kind of spotlight, the Inner Circle segment. I was so close to not liking it, but there were a few things that I thought were particularly great that put it over for me. So okay. It's one where I'm like, I don't know. I could see. Did you not like it?
I have it as a what?
Yeah, I can see that.
It started off in my woos. Let me do one of my woos, and then we're going to get into that, because I think we should talk. Well, let's just talk about right now.
Okay.
No, I think it's important that it's already been brought up. We can't stop it. The train's already going.
You're right.
It's off the rails.
This is how it goes,
So the ultimatum, the Inner Circle ultimatum, the big ultimatum, that's what we're talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jericho and Fam come out to the ring. The Inner Circle's in there. And what did you like about it?
Well, do you want to give an overview first, or
should essentially, Jericho. Oh, that's a good point. Very good point, Moet. Excellent. Thank you for picking me up when I fall. They were coming out to the ring to discuss whether the Inner Circle should continue, whether they should break up and leave. If they can't get along and can't work together, they should dissolve. And Jericho, being Big Papa that he is he brought his family together in the ring as a family father would, and then makes them hash it out there. And MJF, well, tell me what you think. What did you like about it?
Well, the things I liked towards the end. I liked what Sammy Guevara did at the end, and I liked the Wardlow and Jake Hager segment at the end. Mm-hmm. I liked the implications of where it could go, but the first half was real sloppy because it felt like they were rushing the segment where they were like, Jericho kept just talking about how, well, everybody just kept talking about how great the Inner Circle was, and how they had to get MJF and Wardlow in and they had to stay. But like, it just bothered me because they've never had a match together, right? As far as I can think of, maybe I missed something. Yeah, and so there's no history with them other than that he snuck his way into the Inner Circle immediately and then went to Las Vegas. So like, it just felt like they were rushing it for no reason when they were spending so much time building this stupid storyline up. So that's that bothers the hell out of me, but I like that Sammy could potentially turn face with the way they're building it, and it feels very like organic the way he got in both MJF's face and Jericho's face. It's like, I'll shake. Yeah, there was a whole thing about shaking MJF's hand. It's like, I'll shake your hand, but if one thing messes up, and he gets in both their faces, like, then I'm quitting the Inner Circle. And it was like, it was a good moment. I thought the good acting was good. And then they break it with comedy immediately after, with the two of them, with Jake Hager and Wardlow being like, why are you staring at me? It's weird. I don't like it. And it was very good acting, I thought.
This is like, I'll agree with you, Sammy. I agree with you with Sammy, and I agree with you with the Jake Hager and Wardlow thing. Them calling each other creepy, yeah, the staring at anything. But and especially Jake Hager starting like, he has a lisp, but I just want to say that Wardlow's been real creepy with staring at me. It's very funny. But my issue with it is that entire segment was utterly pointless. Like, because I feel like they could have never had this segment, and we could have continued from this path without this ever happening, maybe months down the line. Like you said, it felt too rushed. It didn't make sense, because what they did is they called attention to the things that we already knew, but we were kind of excited to see develop. Now it's just kind of like you said, it's bum rushing it. And also, even the Jake Hager and Wardlow thing, that would have been so much funnier if they did that a month from now, 2 months from now, just to build it. We've only seen them interact twice, and they've been staring at each other. Cool. You know? But like, if you did it for months and they're always staring at each other, then they have that conversation, it's hysterical, because you have so much context behind. Because right now we were just thinking like, oh, the two big guys in the room, they're staring at each other because they think of each other as threats. But like, if that happens for months and then they're just like, man, you keep staring at me. No, you're staring at me. Like, that would have killed.
That would have really killed. Yeah.
If they just were patient with it. They it feels like this show, and we're going to talk about this in our what's, they have no patience. TK has no patience. Moment.
I don't think it's TK's fault. I mean, it's part of his fault, but I don't think it's entirely his.
He signs the bills. He pays the checks. He's the one writing. If it's anyone's fault, it's entirely his.
I guess so. Yeah. I don't know why I felt so defensive over TK. I was like, it's AEW's fault, but it's his fucking company. I don't know what I'm doing right now. Yeah, you're right. Screw you, TK. Make your show better. Yeah.
Why can't you watch our show, TK? Why can't you listen to us? You'd learn something. Oh man.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree with you, though. Yeah, it's way too rushed. I thought it was okay that they did it now, that they pulled the trigger on that silly, like, I like that it turned into a joke. I like that instead of like the stereotypical like two meathead dudes punching each other in the face, which is wrestling and is okay in this scenario. Yeah. But I like that they turned on its head and turned it into a joke of like, stop staring at me. You know, I thought that was fun, but you're right. It would have been more interesting a little bit. I think it would have worked either way. I think it probably
it's going to work. Yeah. It's going to be fine. I guess I'm being nitpicky, but I just didn't feel that this segment needed to happen.
No.
I feel like this segment happening a month from now would mean so much more than right now.
Yeah, no, I guess I was, that was the other point I meant to make as well. Sorry. It was that, like, that's just, I'm used to Jericho getting a segment every single week. And so maybe that's just their conditioning. I'm like, of course he's going to have to say something. It's Jericho. But a lot of his segments aren't necessary whatsoever. Especially in the last probably 3 weeks since Las Vegas happened, at least since the pay-per-view, that didn't bother me off the top of my head, because I'm like, another annoying. Yeah. The whole crowd's going to sing a song and then he's going to have to speak, you know, something. There's always a couple like interesting things that come from it, cause he's still like really good at what he does, but overall it's not necessary. Yeah.
What they could have done, which would have been pretty interesting, is like you said, they need their Jericho segment. They need their Jericho MJF segment because they really like it. They want to get it in there. Instead of having these things where you're basically creating new chapters or extra chapters for a story, why not continue in this one where they're like, show them at the gym together? they're all working out together, and you see MJF, like, not using the same machine as Sammy because he didn't use wipes to wipe it down or something like that, or something. Like, you could show them there. You could show them after work. You should before work. You could show them, like, you could show more reasons why they're dissolving. Show them at meetings, planning meetings, and then MJF takes over because he's just like, oh, well, we heard enough from the kid Sammy, and just keep underscoring them. I feel like there would be a lot, because we haven't seen much of that.
Yeah.
We've seen them, yeah, you know, but either way, I do agree with those things. I like the idea of Sammy did great. Sammy really did a good
Sammy
job.
Sammy did good, yeah. Yeah, last week was a big deal when MJF pushed him off of the top rope. That was a big deal, but there just needed to be more. I think it didn't feel as, like, the way they handle it tonight, there should have been more moments like that, I think.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Whew. Are you okay?
All right.
How do you feel?
I'll get there. well, that wasn't my woo, but my next woo of the night, this is less than a woo, but it's so FTR took on the Varsity Blondes, which I thought was a very good match. I'm going to put that in the woo.
I liked it.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. I liked the match. It was short, but you got you knew that Varsity Blondes were a threat. They are doing a good job. I'm liking what they are going. I'm not a big fan of Varsity Blondes as a name. I kind of hate it.
No, the reference. The reference, Red. It's a cute reference.
It's
the Hollywood Blondes. His dad.
Brian Pillman is barely blonde.
His father was in a tag team, and now he is his father. That's what.
Then dye Brian Pillman's hair. Dye it blonde.
It's do they not have blonde hair? They have kind of brownish, blondish
Griff
hair.
Griff kind of does,
it's
maybe.
It's a Varsity Blonde, okay? It's not quite blonde. It's like you know.
I remember that crayon, Varsity Blonde. I remember that color. That's a very specific brown.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what they had.
It's a very strong brunette. But the best part about that match was FTR and Tully in their brand new red satin jackets. Outstanding. Beautiful. Every time.
I'm glad you brought
that up. I love them working as a team. I like that promo. Like it all. They did a good job.
It's good stuff.
I think they did a good job this week. Yeah. And do you have another woo?
That's it.
Well, I have one more woo.
What's
that
your woo?
Squo's in there. And I think you're going to like this one, Moet. Darby Allin.
Oh,
his newest
I
video.
Thought you were going to say Abaddon.
His newest video.
No, that's
best
a
one
what?
Yet.
That's a
best.
What?
Well, it's 100% the best one yet. And I feel bad that I've never put Darby Allin in the woos. Never. Never in my life have I ever or will I ever again.
This is not the time, Red.
This is the time.
Not the time.
This is the time. Because he used a storytelling device, which is new for him. It's new.
That's true.
For him to be, it's new. I thought it was interesting. In all honesty, how the ink blots got more and more like the wrestlers. First was a real ink blot, and he's just like, oh, that's Ricky Starks. Another ink blot. Oh, that's Will Hobbs. Then a clearly just a guy like muscle, and that's Brian Cage. It's apparently they're continuing their feud. But the last one with Sting, I kind of like the smirk and laugh. I would love to direct these videos a little bit.
Did you say smirk and laugh? What's that?
A smirk and a laugh.
Wait, what? Yeah, what do you mean? He smirked when he saw Sting.
Darby saw a picture of Sting. Let me actually tell the audience that are listening right now. Darby Allin in his newest masterpiece, very Seven Seal, sitting across from what I believe to be some sort of psychologist, holding ink blots, Rorschach test, and he's going up, and Darby's just like sees one picture, he's like, "That's Ricky Starks." Sees another picture, that's Hobbs. Well, he called him other things. He called sheep in wolf's clothing or wolf's
snake
clothing,
in the grass.
Snake in the grass, and then Hobbs, Brian Cage, which was clearly a picture of Brian Cage, and he said the thing. And then they showed a clear picture of Sting's makeup, and then he just smirked and laughed, which was it's his best work. One thing I will say though, the music in it is so bad. Each one is so bad. Listen to it again. It doesn't fit the mood at all. None of the music that he uses fits the mood of what he's trying to do at all. But I do like the idea of him continuing with this every week. He's with a psychiatrist again, because that's what this little white kid needs. This little nerdy skateboarding kid that's so angry and paints his face half. He's like skateboarding to the ring, and he's got a psychiatrist that's like trying to like. His parents are paying for it. His parents are paying for it. That's I'm creating this entire Raven-like scenario in my brain that he's this rich kid that's so moody.
Yeah, No, I feel it. Yeah, yeah.
And he's got the money to buy this camera and do all this editing. He's got a big yard where he could just destroy a fucking car.
It's ridiculous.
Where do you get your money from, you frickin'?
Just ridiculous. Narc. The fire on the, yeah. It is definitely his best work so far. But that's like saying
it's obvious that Darby Allin listens to this and we're trying to give him positive reinforcement. I understand what you want to say. You'll be like, oh, the dog didn't shit on the rug.
That's
today.
Basically what I'm trying to go at. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Sometimes we just got to say, good boy. Good boy. Here's a cookie.
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't so into the ink blots that look so obvious. I thought that was such a gimmick. It was such a dumb. It was so close to being good. Dumb. If they didn't do that. If they just didn't do that, and that's if they had more like traditional ink blots, I think that would be the only thing that would make me okay with it. But the fact that it's actually Brian Cage and staying in those particular ink blots,
it really ruined
it. It really like was like, oh no, this is just amateur level again. It was, and it's really interesting how like that one thing can just like flip my opinion, you know, ridiculous, you know.
But if I see more of these from Darby Allin, I'd be fine with it. Like, yeah. This is the type of content I'm fine with. It's preceding a story. We're learning a little. Like, I like the idea his world has a psychiatrist in it. I would love for the psychiatrist to be the only person he interacts with. And I think we should move forward with that.
But why does he have a psychiatrist? Where is this coming? But like,
because he's a fragile little boy that wants to hurt himself. And he's very angry and angsty, and his parents forced him.
No, you're right. I don't know.
Otherwise, they're
going
to take away his skateboard, Mowat.
I guess I was mostly upset of just like a new character, like a new scenario without any sort of like context behind it. He should have a psychiatrist. I felt like I was just making negging psychiatrist, which is not a cool thing to do. Of course not. So,
some of them are real nerds.
But they're all trying, I think. I like to think.
They are all trying. And we here at Loser Leaves Wrestling support psychiatrists. And psychology. Go for it. Go for it is what we say.
Yeah,
Mowat, we finished our woos. We finished the good stuff, which is basically the first hour of the show. Now let's go on to the what's. The big old dog shits. Mowat, what's your first big what of the evening?
What is just the garbage ending with a garbage MJF Orange Cassidy match, but most particularly the garbage ending. It felt so 2000s WCW, what happened? The match itself, I think, so I'm going into it with a bias because I'm done with Orange Cassidy. I think I'm overloaded on him and I just need a break from him. I still like him. I just need a break. I need distance from Orange Cassidy. It's like a breakup, I guess. But yeah.
No, it's true.
Yeah. So the match was fine. There's nothing even really to say about the actual match, what they did. It was all fine. I don't know. There's something that stood out. Do you have anything before we
Essentially, MJF and Orange Cassidy, they had a match to decide who gets the diamond ring because of the Battle Royal last week. They were the last two, and MJF had it for a second time. You know, the match was, in all honesty, MJF did a great job. I think MJF did a great job of working the hand, pulling the fingers. I really like MJF's style. MJF's style is really good. It's right up my alley of what I like in wrestling. It's that Orange Cassidy's gimmick has very little range. You know, he had one style of match before Chris Jericho where he was pure Orange Cassidy, but they overutilized him and overutilized that character. And then post Jericho, he's now this like fiery babyface that sometimes does his shtick. But the thing is, his shtick is no longer relevant anymore. It's almost like it makes no sense anymore to do it at all. You know, even when there's a moment in the match where MJF was trying to do the Eddie Guerrero throw the weapon, fall on the ground, I got hit. And then Orange Cassidy drops it and just puts his hands in his pocket. And that upset MJF, I guess.
Oh,
so
no,
he got
part,
up and...
That part was great. That was the one part that? I liked. Because what happened was, so they took like it was kind of an emotional roller coaster for me because I was like, they're doing the damn Eddie Guerrero spot again, which is like, you know, it's been done dozens of times, you know, but he pretends that Orange hit him, but he puts his hands in his pocket, which is a very obviously in character thing that Orange Cassidy does. So what the implication is that the ref is going to turn around. And of course, Orange wouldn't have hit MJF because he had his hands in his pockets. Orange Cassidy doesn't do anything. He just sits there. So I thought that was like a fun twist. So MJF gets up immediately and realizes if the ref turns around, he's not going to be able to convince him that that's what happened. So that's where all the shenanigans happen. They twist it around.
I can see that you're very passionate about this, and I don't want to fight you on it. I don't want you to yell at me. But okay, I'll move on from that. Essentially, though, his characters, the character work of Orange Cassidy really doesn't fit in his matches anymore, for the most part.
Well, I agree with that. I guess I agree with that overall. But I thought that segment was clever. If they had to do that dumb thing, then I thought it was clever. But what I don't like was...
I just wish it was done differently, I guess. I don't know. I wish his hands were already in his pocket. I don't know. The idea of him holding it and then dropping it and putting his hands in a pocket, it bothered. But I get what you're saying, and I'll concede.
Now my problem is that there's two... Like, they didn't need that. My issue was that if it happened... It didn't affect anything in the match. So it was essentially like a useless spot. And that, like, they just kept wrestling afterwards and it had no consequence. Like, he rolled up MJF and he kicked down. They just kept going. And that's what annoyed me about it. And it felt like everything was useless. Like, the lumberjack thing was useless. Everything was useless until Miro came out. And that was also useless. So I don't know.
And let's just talk about the ending then. MJF, Miro comes out with all the distractions. Ref's super distracted. Not like there's ever going to be a disqualification anyway, so it really doesn't matter. But Miro comes out, hits Orange Cassidy. MJF picks up the win. And then Miro goes ham, just demolishing everyone. In a different world would have been a really cool beatdown. Because I love him beating people up.
Oh, Miro's great.
Miro looks great beating people up. He's a very realistic brawler. Like, in those big pull-aparts, it looks like he might actually hurt someone. Mm-hmm. And so it's very scary to see him, like, raging. But in the circumstances where I have no care why Miro doesn't like Orange Cassidy. It's such a stupid, dumb, superficial reason to dislike someone that it doesn't make sense, and I don't care because I don't know Miro's character at all. So it didn't fit in. I just wish it happened in a different place.
I just
that was
can't
a great
believe
beatdown.
How much of a dud Miro's debut has been so far. I guess you can't really call it a debut anymore, but whatever it is, Miro's been a dud in AEW. And I'm just surprised because I thought they would really push him or just give him something more to go with. But maybe that's just like an AEW.
They are.
No, they're not.
They're giving him so much TV time.
No,
they're giving him because that's a part of the process at AEW.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
You are your own creator of your destiny.
Yeah,
like, you have your world, and you're giving feedback, and you're getting feedback. But, like, Miro wants to go down this path of nerd juggernaut, right?
Yeah, no, that's essentially it. Yeah, a jock nerd, a jock that plays video games. But that's why, they give him a lot of time, but they're not actually, like, helping him. And that's my shock, is it's clearly he needs help. They both, like, him and Kip Sabian, they need help finding a friggin', like, storyline to grasp onto. And it doesn't seem like they're, like, offering any suggestions. That's just how it feels from the product they're putting out. I don't know.
Tony Khan. Yeah. Tony TK Khan. Well, we want Miro and MJF and Orange Cassidy to do the best. We just want them to do the best in what we want. Moet, what's your next big what? What do you got?
Next one, Shaq. I thought that was just a real boring letdown. Oh. I thought it was just so, like, why would you just be so... Why would Jade come out being like, I got a partner, I got a real partner, Shaq! And, you know, that, like, that ridiculous-ass segment from 2 weeks ago. And then Shaq's big moment is like, hey, I just want to be friends. I just want to be friends with everybody. Like, what a weenie. What a weenie moment for Shaq. Like, friggin' eat some Papa John's, eat banana peppers and fucking bring the fire, Shaq. Like, do something, for God's sakes. This is pro wrestling, you know? Like,
hold on. Let's lay off Shaq for a second.
Maybe
I agree.
I'm just joking.
This is in my what's. But Brandy is the least believable performer in AEW. That gets that much clout. I don't believe a single thing she says. Everything seems so unnatural. So unnatural for her. Have you watched a shot of Brandy?
Yes. Yes, I have. I've seen a few
episodes.
That's
the best part.
No, they're
actually
pretty good.
That's the best part of Brandy.
Depending on the guest, they're really good, yeah.
Brandy is I've only seen her where I've liked her in that show.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen her on Dynamite in a segment where I thought she was useful or a good player. And the thing is with Shaq, someone said this online, and I think Meltzer was talking about it. They're like, why is Shaq and Sting on the same show? Why not space it out?
Mm-hmm.
And they've already been planning Sting, or like they've got Sting, and Shaq, what word is that if Shaq is able to be there that day, they're going to use him, you know? So it just kind of coincided. So I thought Shaq was going to be in ring or at the show. This was a taped segment. This was a taped segment. Why didn't they show it on a different episode to make us like, oh, Shaq's going to be on next week? You know, why is Shaq and Sting on the same week? That just seems silly. But also, if it's a taped segment, they have no excuse for how bad it was. Like, I feel like if it's a taped segment, they could talk it through. Shaq is not a wrestler, so he shouldn't be going in there blind. Brandi should not be leading a segment. I just don't get all the decisions they made, because I don't understand why Shaq is with Jade. I don't understand why Brandi is upset with Shaq. I don't understand why Shaq's there. I don't understand why there was an interview in the first place. I don't understand why Tony was even there. None of it made sense.
This is interesting, Greg, because I think what you said of how they should have spaced things out, I agree, but it's also sort of the reason why I like AEW and why I want to tune in every Wednesday is because their format is like they pack their episodes in with what feels like a dozen must-see moments every single week. And I feel like this is like a lukewarm episode, and so they had to pack in like Sting returning, Kenny Omega speaks, Shaq speaks, you know. I don't know if that's the best way to do it, though, because I agree with you there. I'm just trying to think of why they actually do it. It's probably that format of feeling like Attitude Era wrestling.
One would have been great if they just showed a segment with Shaq and Jade coming to the arena.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to the arena, just Shaq's with her because they're friends. And like, or something like that. Show the relationship between Shaq and Jade, because otherwise I have no idea why she came out in the front. I still don't know. He says he knows her from a while back, but that's literally was a sentence. There's no connectors.
It doesn't make sense why she just wasn't there. Like, why wouldn't she just be there with him? Like, what, why, if it's a big celebrity, why not have Cody there? Why not make it more of a thing? Why not have, I mean, it makes sense if he's not in the ring, I guess, because if he just can't physically be there, maybe that's a thing. I don't know.
Sure.
But, like, you're right, there's no connections. So why do it that way? Like, have some back and forth and explain, like, you know, the chemistry between them.
Yeah. And just to relay this to the beatdown, the other beatdown night for Red Velvet, and we also don't understand why Jade's doing this, and that's fine. That's fine to have some sort of mystery, but they're tying in so many storylines at once. They have all these storylines that are kind of interconnected, which is cool. I love that. I love the idea that these characters don't just interact with their opponent, but also their opponent's opponent, or their, you know, like, I like that. But Jade is beating up on these women's wrestlers. We've never seen her wrestle. We don't know her relationship with Shaq. We don't know her relationship with Vicky and Nyla Rose. Why are they a part of this? And there's too many. It feels like an episode of Lost. It feels like an episode of Lost. And I have to wait a week. A week to find out the rest. Lost is best bingeable, so I can have the answers now.
But this is like a bad episode of Lost.
It's a bad episode of Lost.
You know, it's I can't think of it. Like the polar bear. Season, oh, I don't care about the friggin' polar bear. Whatever. Well, they'll explain it eventually.
It's season 7 of Lost, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's
season 7.
They're all in heaven. Man. They're all in purgatory. That's the...
To be honest, though, if you rewatch Lost, you should. And rewatch it, binge it. It's pretty delightful.
Maybe.
I've done it twice.
Now I feel bad. I'm sorry if I just spoiled Lost for anybody listening right now. Well, I'm sorry, Bacon.
Well, in all honesty, I actually disagree with your theory on that, but we'll have to discuss off air.
Well, no. We could discuss this right now. No, of course it's purgatory. What do you mean it's not?
Get out of here. You're going to spoil for Bacon.
Yeah,
you're spoiling it for Bacon.
I'll agree with that. All right.
Moving on. We got two for two. We're two for two for these guys.
All right. The Dustin Rhodes versus 10 match was super boring and stupid. I have nothing else to say about that.
We're on the same page.
Yeah.
Dustin Rhodes faced 10 for no reason. They faced each other. Dustin won with a bulldog in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I complain a lot about the length of these matches and how they're too long. But the last person I want to have a squash match is Dustin Rhodes over 10.
Yeah, 10.
10 is a pretty good wrestler.
He looks like $1 million.
It looks like $1 million, but you're having this old man go over? In about 5-6 minutes with a bulldog? Dustin Rhodes has better finishers than that. He has the final cut, the curtain call. He has the Shattered Dreams. He could do the Crossroads. He could do them all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they won with a bulldog.
Ridiculous.
10 looked like shit in this match. And it was all for Dark Order to reach out to Dustin to see if he wanted to join, which I kind of like because he is wearing almost Dark Order colors.
Oh.
He just has to switch that blue over to a purple, and he's there.
Interesting.
But you care nothing. You care nothing about the storyline.
I like the ending.
I love Evil Uno.
That's what I really like. I liked hearing Evil Uno speak because he's gotten really good at it in AEW.
He's really good.
Something has changed. Really, he's very. He's a good showman.
He's very calm and he's very gentle.
Yeah, I love Dustin slaps him, but I love that moment where he's like, no. And I forgot what he said off the top of my head. He's just very. Sinister. He has a very sinister vibe too, but very, very powerful in it, even though he got slapped.
But also warm. Mm-hmm. Also warm. He seems like, and I'm not trying to like make him out to be the best performer ever, even though he's pretty great. But like he there's a warmth to him, like, yeah, like, come on, join. Come on, what are you gonna do?
It
was very good.
I was upset about the match. Because it didn't feel necessary. It felt like 10 just looks amazing and like should be pushed a little bit more. Like he looked like the most like feared character in the Dark Order before Brody Lee. Just from physique, I guess, and the way, his menacing kind of qualities. So that was a shame. And then I don't know where the hell this thing of inviting Dustin into the Dark Order came from, but I like the line where he's the third most important Rhodes in AEW. That was a great line, so I'm okay with it, I guess.
But also, if I'm not mistaken, they offered him the role in Dark Order as 7.
Yeah, that was weird. I thought that was weird.
Well, you know why 7 is interesting? Because I think when he went to TNA, he was 7. His name was 7.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I think that's pretty great.
That's good. That's a lot better, But that's better. That's
and
good.
So you're number 3 here, but you could be number 7 with us. Like you could be you with us. I don't know.
Oh, that's actually really good.
There's something there.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope they continue down that path. I'm curious about the ending. The ending was the best part of that match besides the bullshit match. All right, we're 3 for 3. Let's get on. We got 2 more left. I'm just going to get it out of the way. Inner Circle Ultimatum. We went through it on my side. I thought it was a little useless, and that's off my list. We already discussed it. We talked it to death. Moet, what else you got?
I'm actually done. I think that's it. We already discussed the other things I said. I wrote Darby Allin. Oh, the Darby Allin promo I thought I didn't like. I didn't like, so we already talked about that. So Kenny Omega was my last one, which we talked about already.
Yeah. Okay, so. Well, I have one more. Family versus Phoenix, Lance Archer, and Penta.
Oh, yeah.
Penta got taken out. Penta was taken out early. I do not think Lance Archer should ever be in a tag team. Ever be in a tag team, because it goes against his character entirely. Like, the thing is, I like him as a babyface. I think he would make a great babyface. But the minute you have him tagging with people is the minute I stop caring about him. Because the thing I like about him is that he's a bomb. He's a bomb you throw in, set off, and he'll rage. He's kind of like Stone Cold Steve Austin meets Bruiser Brody to me. Mm-hmm. Like, he has no friends, and he's a wild man. And the only person he trusts is Jake, who's wearing a snakeskin jumpsuit in this match.
Yeah.
Like, he's wearing sneakers and a giant snakeskin jumpsuit, which was very distracting. I'll tell you, you want to distract me in a wrestling match where I'm not watching wrestling? Have a 6'5" guy on the outside dressed as in snake's clothing hovering around, towering over Phoenix. Towering over him.
It was
so weird. And I'm sorry, the family... I have no interest in Eddie Kingston. I think he needs to move on to something else. I think Butch and the Blade and the Bunny, Butcher? I love their look.
Yeah, they're fine.
I love their their faces.
Yeah, they got good faces. The mustache.
They got the I love his face.
Love that mustache.
I love his face so much. Don't get me started, Mullet. I like him. Them coming to the ring today was their old gear. No longer in the white pants. He's wearing the gimp mask again, and he's wearing the monocle again, which I love.
Monocle's
good. I like that. It's good, but the it's just. I don't like this family thing. It doesn't feel real to me. And Eddie Kingston is the most... I think they should push for that Eddie Kingston is the most desperate man in wrestling. And they hit something with that Jon Moxley thing. They hit something in that Jon Moxley feud where they're like, you're desperate. You've never made it to the top, and now you're old. And now you're at the top, and you're grasping at anything. He should move on to person, trying them to be his family. Like, I need some family. I need some family. He keeps fucking it up because he's a bad family member.
That's really good. I feel sad that this is where his life has taken him, that the character, because he came in with so much passion, so much fire, and he still has it, but every single time now that he does it and he loses, it's just losing that importance, that weight to it that it did when he came in a burning, you know, ball of anger, you know, against Cody. And that makes me sad, but you're right. I think that's probably the best storyline.
But even so, with that storyline with Cody, like, I feel like that was him. He came out and when his promo was desperate, like he's this sad middle-aged guy that's coming out to the, maybe middle-aged. He's probably my age for all I know. He's probably like 5 years older than me. No, but like, he's this like guy that's ending his, like towards the end of his career, the latter half of his career. And he just, he needs this moment to be everything it is, but he's just not good enough of a wrestler.
Hmm.
He's not that good, but he's passionate and he'll do anything to do it. And so like, that's why he'll get championship matches, because he'll do anything. He'll, and that's what I kind of like about him. But the issue is no one should want to be with him because they realize how poison he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like I would like Butcher and the Blade to be like, listen, we haven't won a match since you've been with us.
Yeah.
I would love that. And like, you know, you're Penta's best friend. You're not our best friend.
I feel like he kind of messed up the match a little bit. I think he just seemed out of it. Like, it wasn't his night tonight. There were a few moments where he just seemed like out of place. Like he did a whole thing where he did this kind of boxing kind of thing towards Lance Archer, which got him in the ring, got the ref distracted, and then he ran over to the ring, to his side, and he kind of like pointed.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and then they didn't know what to do, and he was just like, come on! And they still didn't know what to do, and then nothing happened. It was very awkward.
I think that was a Butcher fault.
Maybe.
I think Butcher is, like, bless him, because he has one of the best looks in wrestling. In all honesty, he's like, I wouldn't mind seeing, if he could wrestle better, I wouldn't mind seeing him as champion, just because he's so cool looking.
Yeah.
He looks so evil. Like,
TNT champion, I could see, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I thought you said TNA champion. I was like, that's a pretty good diss, Moet. That's a pretty good diss. The thing is, he gets frequently lost in the ring. Like, Phoenix was trying to do this springboard thing where he's got his hands, and he just kept getting in Phoenix's way. Mm. And then Phoenix is just like, oh, no, follow me. And he ran over to the corner, dragged him over, and that thing where he's trying to box with Lance Archer, ref distracts, and he's just like, come on, help me, because he distracted the ref, come in and help cheat. And then Butcher's just like, well, you didn't tag me. Like, I'm just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, there was a tag moment where he's like, should she tag me in? But he was like, no, the ref isn't looking at me. Maybe that's what happened. Yeah,
it was entirely really Butcher not realizing what, like, part of the match or what was happening. I think he was just lost, and you could see Eddie Kingston just be like, forget it. Like,
oh, that's a good observation, Red. Yeah, I didn't catch it fully then.
I saw that. I remember seeing that. Even though I was in and out of this match, mentally, like, I saw that part because it was weird.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Moet, what a night we had. Jeez Louise. If you were to put this on a ranking scale of let's say grades, a grade, what kind of grade would you give this AEW Dynamite?
I'd say it's like a C, you know? C minus maybe, C plus. I don't know. It's in that middle. It's not bad. It's not great. It's a transition episode. It feels like
Well, let's give it five. How many stars? 5 out of 5. How many stars?
I give it a 5 or 6 out of the at the top of the episode. But out of 5 stars, I'd say 2.5 stars.
Well, actually, how about thumbs? Thumbs.
What are we
doing? 2 thumbs up, 2 thumbs down, 1 in the middle. What would you say about that mullet?
One thumb up, one thumb down.
That's good. Okay. I'm having a rough time, Moa. It's so hot in this room. I turn off the air conditioner for this. But this has been the woos and whats of AEW Dynamite.
What is it? What did you grade? You didn't tell me what you graded. You just made me grade it eight different ways. That's what you...
I agreed with every one of your answers.
You did such a great job. Thanks.
We've been on the same page. In all honesty, we fucking aced it with this what's today. We did a great job. AEW, not so much, but what they're picking it up next week. I have no idea what's happening next week, but I'm hoping they do. I'm hoping they do. We had so much fun. Follow us at Loser Lee's Wrestling on Instagram and Loser Lee's Pod on Twitter. What?
Oh, is this going to help you out? It felt like you were stumbling. I got you, buddy.
Oh, you got it. It's so sweet. And make sure to review and tell your friends to listen. Tell your friends, you old Canadians. Tell your friends over in Edmonton or in Alberta, Vancouver here likes wrestling.
Do they know that I'm Canadian? I don't know. Would that help? Shout out to my Belleville buddies, Belleville, Ontario.
Belleville Buddies? Wow, that's the name of their basketball team, the Belleville Buddies. And thank you all so much for listening. My name is Red Jefferson.
Oh, hey, my name is Mo Jaswell. Thank you for listening.
Thank you all so much for listening. Mowit, if you were to turn your skin inside out and wrestle in a caveman outfit, what would your nickname be?
Jesus Christ, the hairy, muscle man. I'm leaving.
Hairy muscle man. Yeah, you did so good. Hairy muscle man. Hairy McMuscle man. Sometimes my questions are real cut and dry. Sometimes I'm confused by the world.